Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports, and we are live at the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. And we're hanging out here at Pete and Terry's ahead of the Predators matchup with the Arizona Coyotes tonight. Important game against kind of a bad team. Pick up the wins, pick up the points, wherever you are, because the Predators absolutely are in a playoff race. But it is not just any old game tonight. It's PK Subban night tonight. PK Subban will be honored ahead of the game tonight. He's going on kind of a farewell tour. Willie, you were there in Montreal when he was honored a few weeks ago, and I expect very similar energy here tonight. I know everyone, a bunch of Preds fans, absolutely love and adore PK and what the PK tenure in Nashville represented for this franchise and for this city.
Yeah, I've said this too. You know, it's been, we're a little bit removed from it now, but if you look at the three seasons that he was a Predator, those were, hands down, it's really not debatable, the three best seasons of the Predators as a franchise. Mm-hmm. You know, Stanley Cup Final in 2017, President's Trophy, Central Division Champs in 2018, and then another Central Division Championship in 2019. I mean, that's the banners. Those are the banners up there on the wall, and and he had a ton to do with that, for sure. So he made his mark in the three seasons he was here. And as you guys know, just the personality, the charisma that just sort of goes everywhere, wherever he goes, right? He makes his mark. He did a great job here in the community in just a short period of time. And in Montreal, you know, I'll never forget the two nights. The first one was his first trip back to Montreal as a Predator. Mm-hmm. And that got very emotional. And then, of course, just a few weeks ago when we were there again, his first time coming back after as a retired player. But you could just tell the love that was showered everywhere here. I don't, you know, he wasn't here as long in Nashville, so I don't know if it'll be quite like it was because they watched him come up through the ranks.
Right.
You know, as in Montreal, as a very young player, you know, burst on the scene playing with Hal Gill back in the day, and they made some really nice playoff runs. So that's it's a little bit different, right? Your first time with it, they see you for the first time, as opposed to here, where you know the big trade for Shea Weber, different dynamic, but still just an outstanding player for sure. And now, you know, jumping in there to the booth, I think we all knew that as soon as his playing career was over, he could have his pick of how he wanted to, you know, be a media personality. And I think he's done a really good job so far for ESPN.
Yeah, you have to take your hats off to, and I said this to you, Willie, you and Caroline off the air. I'm like, listen, he only played 3 years here. And they were really good years. It was some three of the best years of the franchise existence. And he was a part of that. But for the Nashville Predators to honor him, knowing that he wasn't drafted by this team, he only spent a small portion of his career. It was an impactful, 3 years here, but albeit it was small and they're still honoring him. That just speaks volumes for that. You know, for this franchise, for this organization, and to me, this is why, you know, I believe this is the top-notch organization because of the little things that they do, not necessarily the big things. They didn't have to honor PK. He wasn't drafted by them. They didn't draft him. He didn't spend, you know, 6, 7, 8 years here. He spent 3 years, albeit there were really good years for this franchise, but they're still choosing to honor him because they know exactly what it takes to play at a certain level in this league and to be successful. And they didn't want that to go unnoticed for him. I'm pretty sure he knew how much the organization, you know, enjoyed his stay here and appreciated his stay here. But for them to honor him in this way, I think it's huge. I will always say they're an A-plus for me, the Predators, always from here on out.
I think another thing that comes to mind for me, and we'll maybe if we have time, we'll get a chance to ask him about it, but we know right now how delicate it can be sometimes to talk about the police and everything like that. He created a program. He thought about that. He created a program here to try to improve the relationship between the community and the police. It's called the Blue Line Buddies. It still exists. I mean, it was great forethought by him. He said, you know, I grew up, I have a good friend who's a policeman. You know, I see what's going on. I see some of the issues that are there. So what can I do? You know, so he creates this. So he's done so many things like that. But his magic touch with kids at a hospital is just, I think, probably second to none. He could jump into a situation and make a connection with a family, with a young kid. I mean, he's got a gift with that. And I think that's what he has done beyond being just a tremendous player. You know, that first and foremost, it's a great player, but also makes his mark in those other ways too.
I think that is so important. It's something that whenever we remember Pekka, we'll always remember what Pekka did on the ice. But you'll always remember, too, what Pekka did off the ice and his philanthropic efforts. And I think PK is very similar in that way, that when you think about PK Subban, you think about what he did on the ice and how impactful he was for this organization and how valuable his presence was. You know, when we look back on the history of the Predators, that small yet very important chapter revolved around PK Subban. But I think we also need to remember all the philanthropic efforts and his impact on the Nashville community, on the hockey community. Everywhere he has touched has become better because of his efforts.
No, well said. No question about it. So hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to him. And as you mentioned, you know, this is an important game. Like, we were just talking to John Hines. This is a struggling Coyotes team. No question about it. They kind of raised their hand and said, you know, we're in a full rebuild at the start of the season.
I think they're in Bedard mode.
No question about it. And, you know, most recently they have scratched one of their best defensemen because they're going to trade him. And so we think that that could happen at any time. It hasn't happened yet, which is a little awkward. They sat him before the last game in St. Louis, and they almost won the game. But you figured, well, the trade is coming. When are they going to announce it? They still haven't done that. So it's kind of hovering there, but it doesn't look like he'll play tonight, Jacob Chychrun. But as John Hines said, look, we're in no position to not play our best. We can't have any off nights at all. So you've got to hope that they can have their A game tonight, take care of what they need to take care of. And they'll have to do it without Philip Forsberg. He'll be out.
How long is he out?
Well, they announced day-to-day with an upper body. If you watch the game against Philadelphia, you could probably
see
what it was, maybe. You know, we don't like to speculate on broadcasts, and you can't know for sure. But in the meantime, what everybody's been clamoring for is going to happen. Phil Tomasino gets the call, and he's going to jump in there, and we'll see what he looks like. He's, by all reports, he's done a really good job of trying to take his game to a new level, you know, with the layers to your game. You know, physical strength, battles on the boards, work ethic, understanding what it takes defensively, offensively, in all three zones of the ice. So I'm excited to see what he looks like here, and this is an important time for him. If he can jump in, they need him to sort of provide a little bit, and everybody has to sort of pick up their game a little bit in the absence of a great player like Forsberg.
And it's a big move for Philip Tomasino. I know it's something that Predators fans have been calling for. Is you say you want to get younger and you want to get into this next generation of the core of the Predators? Well, let's see him. See him out on the ice, and we'll see if Philip Tomasino will be able to answer the call tonight, filling in for Philip Forsberg tonight.
And the other part about it, too, for Tomasino, it's not just in the games that Forsberg missed. And let's knock on wood, keep our fingers crossed.
It's
not too long for Forsberg, but the goal for Tomasino, and this is what David Poile's been saying, I want to see him come up and be ready so that he doesn't have to go back down. So what he's trying to do is win a permanent job, create competition to where they say, you know what, we can't send this guy back down. He's ready. We need him here every night. So that's something to watch for, too, because until Forsberg comes back, Tomasino's going to be in there. So this is going to be a very interesting time for him, because in that time, how he plays will determine whether he goes back to Milwaukee or he becomes a permanent fixture here, which is what I think everybody's hoping
for. Well, you got a chance to sink or swim right now.
Yeah.
Either you're going to stand up tall or you're going to, you know, whittle back down to, you know, small itty-bitty little thing. And go back to,
Go back to Milwaukee.
Exactly, go back to Milwaukee.
Big night for Philip Tomasino. Also a big night for PK Subban, who will be honored tonight ahead of the Preds matchup with the Arizona Coyotes. PK is going through his car wash today, so he's running a little bit behind. But we will chat with him coming up next. It's Caroline Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
It's always special. You know, I think throughout my career, everyone talks a lot about Montreal, which was a great time and where my career started. But, you know, I believe that some of the best years and most enjoyed years were here in Nashville for me, no doubt. And not just because we had a really good team. It's just the people, you know. I mean, I had to think in 3 years to not have an issue with any of your teammates, like to not have issues with anybody in the organization, to really just embrace everybody and have everybody embrace you. That's a special thing, and I think to be able to celebrate that tonight is what's special to me, because, you know, I had some of my best years here in Nashville. When you look at my playing career, I had some really good games here, some good playoff runs, and, you know, a lot of how I evaluate my career is in the postseason, and we had some really good teams, you know, and a couple of the guys are still here. So, you know, I what I take from my time in Nashville above everything else, whether it be everyone in the front office and how they've treated me, treated my family, my team that's come, is my teammates. You know, I'm still very close with a lot of these guys, and, you know, so in a lot of ways, these are my favorite group of guys that I've played with. So it's a special night to come back, and I'm going to try to get these guys fired up like I did the guys in Montreal for sure.
There you go. That was PK Subban on his return to Nashville, and PK will join us shortly. He's going through his car wash. Run PK time. That's fine. So we'll get to your phones. In the meantime, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. One text your text in and says, do you think that PK would consider Nashville home? Something that we can certainly ask PK. I mean, like you just said there, yeah. Only spent 3 years of his career here. It's not a massive amount of time, but of course, an impactful amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot of good things about Montreal. So, I mean, hell, whether he stay here or move back to Montreal, I think he'll still, you know, enjoy life because he's doing what he wants to do. He's part of the media. He's still able to, you know, get out and I'm sure at 10 games and stuff like that. So wherever you're at, you know, in regards to PK, I mean, he's going to enjoy it. But, you know, with him, I think, you know, if I had grown up in the South and, you know, retired, I think I'd have moved back home to the South. But being from Michigan, I'm like, man, I'm not doing that cold weather.
It's cold up there.
Yeah. Michigan's a great place, and I just can't do the cold weather. And, it, you know, it's a – you can enjoy yourself up north because it's a bigger city, a lot of things to do, and I'm sure Montreal's the same way.
And, I mean, your perspective, you had a few different stops along the way in your career. Mm-hmm. You can consider multiple places home. Like, do you consider Baltimore home in addition to Nashville?
Home for me is Michigan. Mm-hmm. You know, even though my mom and dad are deceased, that's home for me because our house is still there. My parents' house is still there. And, you know, my brothers and sisters, with the exception of two of them, are still in Michigan. But home for me is Nashville because my kids were born here.
Yeah.
And born right at Vanderbilt. Shout out to Dr. Graves. She delivered both of them. But home is here now. Went to Baltimore. That was home too, but for different reasons. But, you know, I knew always that I would come back here because this is where the kids were born. And, you know, this is where, you know, they spent the majority of their young adult lives here. So.
Back into your phones. We got a whole lot of insight about the Super Bowl yesterday. Of course, the holding call at the end of the game. 1:58 left on the clock. 35-35 tie game. Kansas City in the red zone driving in Eagles territory. Defensive holding call called. 3rd and 8 now becomes 1st down. Kansas City's able to knock some time off the clock and kick a field goal to eventually win. One texter texts in about the holding call, says he wouldn't have called it regardless. There's hand fighting that goes on every single play. In that situation, it should be a no call. You can call holding on every single play. Do you think there's a good bit of truth to that?
No. I don't know about every play.
Yeah, not every play. It's dramatic, but...
But there's hand fighting that goes on over the course of 58 minutes. I think that's still what I come back to. Uh-huh. Is they hadn't called any throughout the game. Mm-hmm. I wonder what the threshold had been, you know, all the way through. And without going back and watching that part of it, I don't know what the threshold was.
But again, it's if you impeded me at getting to the place I needed to get, not only once, but twice, it's a penalty. Again, the ref didn't call the first one, which he could have. Mm-hmm. He could, and he called, what did he call? Holding.
Yeah.
He didn't call pass interference, which he held twice. I don't know why. People, just understand that. Like, you may not like it. You may, because if you're in that situation, you can't say, well, I wouldn't have called the holding call. You can't say that. So please don't. They are there to make a call. Not only was it once that he grabbed the guy, but he grabbed him twice. He wasn't going to call it the first time. But after he saw it the second time, too, then he's like, listen, I got to throw the flag. You know, it's so blatant that I got to throw the flag. Whether we agree with it or not, he did his job.
It's not the worst call I've ever seen.
Exactly.
No, it's more the context.
It's a legit call. It is the context that I think is that what people had. And I saw this, I think it was Mike Herndon, that I think does a good job of covering the Titans. Uh-huh. He said you have to almost put your disappointment as a fan aside because we thought this great finish was coming, right? Oh, what a great finish we're going to have. Man, this has been a great Super Bowl. And then,
Philly's going to get the ball last with a minute left.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, man, yes.
That is like blockbuster storybook ending.
That shouldn't be why you're mad at the call. I get that. That's a good take there. I keep coming back to it is – they hadn't called a single holding the whole game on the defensive back. So if I'm a DB and I've been getting away with stuff, I should know what I can get away with. And that was borderline. Mm. And now they call the foul right there. I get it.
But it's the right call.
Can't argue.
It was the right call.
And to his credit, the defensive back, I don't think I've ever seen a guy do that. Say, you know what? I grabbed him a little bit.
It was, right. I mean, what, are you going to stand up on your soapbox for the rest of your life and say, I get it, do it, I'm innocent. I do appreciate him owning up to it, but in Mike Sando's pick six this week, one big chunk of it was discussing that call and almost like the unspoken brotherhood of the NFL is even though it was holding and the DB even admitted it was holding, sometimes there are certain instances like when there's 2 minutes left at the end of the Super Bowl and the game is tied where you might kind of turn a blind eye to
it. Like you can get away with a little bit more.
Yes.
It's all sports.
Based upon what?
That it's the end of the game.
No. Based upon what? Have we seen, is there a history? No. Is there a history of last minute plays and there were blatant calls that were showed, like that should have been called.
That wasn't blatant. That was a penalty, but that wasn't blatant. It was not blatant. It was subtle.
Hold on.
It's a penalty.
No. Did he grab him the first time?
He did.
Okay. Did he wrap his arm around
him? Yes, he did.
There's blatant.
You have to slow it down to see it, though. In real time, you can't really see it. It was subtle.
There have been other blatant calls that also don't get called.
Yes.
But to your question, this is what Mike Sando's pick six was about. He interviewed and talked to a bunch of veterans in the league, front office members, so on and so forth. This is a veteran offensive play caller that said, you know how many times that route gets run and it's not called? It's a play team's perennial send into the league and never get the call. Guys grab like that all the time. Mm-hmm. If it stopped the receiver from getting the ball, I understand, but that was not the case.
Yeah, it's tough to play defense.
Whoa. I want to charge Mike Sando to be a receiver. Get out on the field.
He didn't say this. This was a veteran NFL offensive play caller.
But get out there on the field, the offensive play caller. Get out on the field and then let somebody grab you once and then grab you twice and see if you get to the spot you're supposed to get to. You're not.
Well, it's like,
unless the quarterback hold, but he didn't have time to hold, and then threw it.
Right.
Had he had time in a pocket just to sit there, he could have waited and the ball would have been a little bit shorter and he would have been able to run to. He anticipated that once he came out of his break, that he would have a free path and he knew exactly where to throw the ball, where the receiver could get it. You know why the receiver couldn't get it? Because he was held twice.
Okay. I'm gonna break it down to another situation we've all been in. Okay?
Okay.
Let's take a pickup game on the playground.
Uh-huh.
There are people waiting to play basketball, right? It's game point.
Uh-huh.
Next score wins. Mm-hmm. You know how it gets rough, right? You're calling your own foul. You're not going to get a clean look where I can run my little zigzag.
But wait, no.
They're going to hand check me. They're going to bump me a little bit. And if I call a tic-tac foul, they're going to go crazy.
No, Willie.
They're not going to even give me the ball.
What are they going to say? Shoot it out. Shoot it. Tell you to go to the line and shoot it.
No, not in the pickup game.
Yes,
not on the
that's
free
what we did in the
free throws.
No, I'm not talking about free throws. I'm saying, okay, listen, you said that's a foul. You said it's not. All right, go to the free throw line.
Right.
Whoever makes it then.
Okay, yeah.
That's what we
top
used to
of
do.
The key.
Exactly.
Like, you make well, it,
that's
you
what
get
we used to do
back.
In the playground. Like, okay.
If there's a dispute.
If there's a dispute, then go to both of y'all get a shot. Whoever whoever misses.
But
it's
I'm just saying, it's controversial. Either way, no matter what happens, it's controversial.
It is. And I think that overall, more than anything, like I'm not going to deny that was a foul. But the fact that a Super Bowl like that, it was a good game. It was a good game. It was a tie game. The Super Bowl came down to a holding call with two teams like that and with the game going on like that. It was just like all of these like storybook endings and the way that it was all being written. And then it was just, oh. So the final 2 minutes of the game that we all thought were going to be an offensive shootout between two offensive juggernauts really came down to Patrick Mahomes just taking a knee and it coming down to a 27-yard field goal. Just the climax of the game. Mahomes had to make some plays.
No, Caroline, Mahomes, the run was the, you know, the run was the pinnacle play of the game. The run he made at the end of the game.
To set them up to be on the Philly 15. Yeah.
Exactly.
But once they were in the red zone, it was like,
They were going to kick a field goal anyway.
But the Eagles would have had the ball one more.
Yeah, they'd have had the ball with like a minute left.
And still had the timeouts.
Yeah. Kansas City does score, and there's like a minute and a half left on the clock. Like, does Kansas City go for two? Do they have to to go for two to prevent Philadelphia from eventually going for two? Like, all of these things were going through my mind of, what do you do here if you're Kansas City? Like, do you try to run the clock out? What do you do if you're the Eagles? How do you, like, march down the field with a minute left in the game? And in my head, I'm thinking, oh, my God, what's gonna happen? A field goal.
But it wasn't even the holding call, because Philly still would have had a minute left on the clock had not the running back kneeled down the 1 yard line.
That was smart.
Because Philly let him go.
It was smart.
He would have scored a touchdown. Philly still would have had a minute left. Why ain't nobody blaming the running back? Why ain't nobody saying, well, you should have ran it in, man. Gave us a good game. Yeah. Nobody's talking about the running back,
are right.
McKinnon said, you know what? Nah, I'm not going to go in. He's going to slide on the 1 yard line and run some more time off.
Who
the
was it? The Giants. Bradshaw. Against Brady and the Patriots.
Exactly.
I keep going back to the playground, though, D-Mace. You call that foul on the playground a game point. Everybody's going to go crazy. Oh, come on, man. You can't call that.
Let the boys play. Let them play. 615-737-1025. I know that was going to get everyone riled up, and it did. P.K. Subban is here. He will join us coming up next ahead of P.K. Subban night here at Bridgestone Arena. It's Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. It is P.K. Subban night here at Bridgestone Arena. So what better person to join us than P.K. Subban himself? Appreciate you for joining us. And we were just discussing how the three most successful seasons in the history of the Nashville Predators franchise happen to be your three seasons here in Nashville. So what does this team, this city, this franchise mean to you in the context of your career?
Yeah, I mean, to put it in perspective, there's been so many great teams in the organization since 98. So many great players. I mean, you talk about all the Hall of Fame players that have come through here. So many great defensemen as well. And I think it just speaks not only to myself and the way I played here, but the team. I mean, you know, my best takeaway from playing in Nashville were my teammates and the guys that I played with. And, you know, they're a phenomenal group of guys. A lot of them I'm still in touch with now. So, you know, we really built a special bond. And I think in order to accomplish the things that we did during my time here, you do have to have a special bond as a team. And when you think about that first year, like, nobody expected us to really do anything crazy that first year. The expectations were, you know, high, but based on how we started the season, we were kind of 500 team. We had that crazy sickness in Detroit where a bunch of guys drank chicken soup.
I'm just glad they didn't let us into the pregame meal with you guys, BK, because we were spared for that. But that was rough.
But I think all of that stuff was good for us because, you know, there was so much pressure but on our team to perform and get over that hump. And, you know, the organization just stuck with us. You know, they just let us kind of find our groove. And then come March, we just didn't look back. We had bonded with a team and as a team. And I remember we spent a lot of nights on the road. Central Division is the worst travel in the league. So we spent a lot of time in hotels, on the road, a lot of team dinners. And by February, March, we were brothers, you know. So it didn't matter whether we were the first seeded team or eighth seeded team. We were in the playoffs. You didn't want to play us. And, you know, we ended up sweeping the first round. That wasn't a surprise to us in that room. We knew we were a better team.
And we knew that we were better than what our record showed early in the season. It was just figuring out how everybody fit in. And we found that balance. You know, when I started in Nashville, I was playing with Yossi a little bit. Then me and Ekholm built that chemistry. We were able to balance it out. But for our team, we were a special group. And we deserved everything we got. I think we deserved even a little bit more.
Now, BK, you speak about that team and, you know, going through what y'all went through that season and then making it to the Stanley Cup. Did you ever get an opportunity? Because I'm remembering when I was a young player in 99, we went to the Super Bowl. It was like I had all these older guys and I was young. And I never really just stopped and just viewed and looked at everything and took it all in. It was like, go from one game to the next. And I know it's different for you guys because you play seven games in the Stanley Cup, but for us it's just one game. But I never sat down and like, man, let it all soak in. Were you able to just sit back during that time and just let it all soak in?
You know, I played 96 playoff games in my career. Mm-hmm. You know, played a lot of them with Nashville. But when I came to Nashville, I played already a lot of playoff games. And, you know, I was never going to evaluate us as a team during the regular season. You know, even when I look back at my career, I don't evaluate my career on my regular season. I evaluate from the playoffs and how I played. And my whole thing was I never wanted to look back at any playoff run or any year I was in the playoffs and say that I didn't raise my game. Or I didn't elevate my game, or I didn't help my team. I didn't do my job. So, you know, for us, when we got into that Stanley Cup playoff, I think for a lot of the guys it was new. Mm-hmm. For me, it was like, we got to get to the Stanley Cup final. So, you know, once we got to the final, you want to win. Mm-hmm. You don't have a chance to sit back and look around and be like, I'm here, because the other team, the Pittsburgh Penguins, has already been there twice. They're not looking around saying we're here. You know, they're saying we know what we need to do to prepare to win. So I think for our team, for me specifically, it was focused on trying to win and trying to get this thing done. But, you know, the best time to look around was like when we'd be in the lounge and they'd be showing clips of Broadway and all the people. That was what was to take in, because, Nashville had never seen that before, you know, and to be able to have been a part of a team that created that for a city is something special, because Nashville is on the up and up. It's going to continue to grow as a city and expand. It's one of the best cities in North America. You know, in my opinion, it's probably in the top five, you know, of all the great cities in North America that you want to come to, that you'd want to play in as an athlete, you want to live in. So to be a part of that, that was the take back for me, was the impact that we had on the fan base and how we were able to bring everybody out of the woodworks and make them not just fans for that run, but permanent fans moving forward.
Now, I know you just recently retired. So, one, how has retirement, brief retirement thus far, has been for you? But then also, you know, you could have taken your pick at things. You're great in the media. You have this charismatic sort of aura about you. You're, you know, likable by just about everybody. So when you get in the booth, how did you try to figure that out? Like, what do I do? Do I go back for another year? Possibly, yeah, I can do it physically. Or do I get in the booth or go on set like that? Was that a hard decision for you to make?
Well, you know, I think that decisions are never really tough, because, you know, I think in a lot of ways life makes decisions for you. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're just patient enough, you know, decisions are never really tough. You know, for me, I have like my morals, values, and the things that I know make me happy, that make me successful at what I do. So like for me, I always need structure. Mm-hmm. When I have structure, then you just let me work within that structure and I'll be fine. You know, but when, you know, people try to make decisions for you, or if people make decisions for you, that's not going to fly with me, you know, because I established my own independence very early in my career, that I was going to be who I was. I was going to be the way that I was.
I was going to do things a certain way. And ultimately, not everybody is always going to be okay with that. So, you know, when it comes down to a time for me 13 years later, when I know I could probably play the game for at least another 3 or 4 years, like, I got no injury issues. My body's great. I still train the way I would train for an off season. So, for me, the decision was, if I didn't have an opportunity to win a Stanley Cup or play in a situation where I could use all of my talents and ability. You know, I was in New Jersey, which was a rebuilding team. And, you know, as much as I loved playing there and I love those kids, I love those guys, I had a great time. I know they loved me. We had a great time there. You know, I knew that I wasn't going to get the full opportunity to be able to bring to the table of what I can actually bring to a team. And so for me, I always have this perspective is, why take less in life? Like, why take less? Mm-hmm. Like, when would you ever take less in your life? Why would you ever take less? I would never take less in anything. I want to always win. I always want to be at the highest level of my game. And if I couldn't bring the certain level of game that I'm accustomed to, then I won't play. And if somebody isn't going to allow me to bring that level, then I ain't playing. You know, I'm lucky enough to have been able to make enough money in my career. And I've accomplished a lot of really great things. You know, yes, I wanted a shot at a Stanley Cup, but it's got to be the right situation for me, because I can tell you this, it, you know, playing to win a Stanley Cup, you still got to play an 82-game season.
Yeah.
You still got to get to the playoffs, you know, and that is a commitment. And for me and the integrity that I have for the game, I only prepare a certain way. And that's not a switch you can turn on and off. So for me, I wasn't up for being in and out of a lineup next year and on a team. I wasn't, you know, okay with, you know, maybe if I'm on a winning team playing 14, 18, sliding into a situation where you're a part of something, yeah, but those opportunities never really presented themselves until after I retired, you know. And for me, I'm an all or nothing guy. I'm either in or I'm out. I'm never in the way. You know what I mean? So it's like there's no – I think that there were a lot of teams that were surprised that I wouldn't wait it out and see what happens. But I never thought of myself as that player. I never thought of myself as a replacement player. You know, as a guy, you know, I have pride in what I do, but my approach to the game is always going to be here. So I'm not going to allow somebody to only have me come here when it comes to what I want to give. I'm a passionate player. I play off of instincts and passion. That can be taken away from you in the wrong situation. And for me, I have opportunities to do other things. But for me, I always wanted to leave the game loving the game. Not leaving the game saying, man, you know, I hated the last year of my career. I loved every moment that I played. I loved my time in New Jersey, being able to help those young guys get to where they are now. And we look at the New
Pretty
Jersey
good.
Devils and the team that they have. Yeah, and playing a role in helping those guys develop is definitely something that I take from that. So, you know, I think that when it's all said and done, I'm sure I'll write a book one day and I'll be able to talk a little bit more about my transition out of hockey in more depth. But I'm very happy with where I am now. I'm very content with where I am, and I'm excited about the next chapter.
So you're not going to pull a Tom Brady?
The way I am, man, I'm like I said, I'm all or nothing. It's like an ex, man. When I break up with, it's done. We're done. There's no coming back. We're done.
You know, yeah. PK Subban is with us. And PK, we had the pleasure of being in Montreal when they honored you just a few weeks ago, and the thought that came back to me, you know, just you could see the emotion, you could see the connection that you have with those fans, and I'm sure we'll see some of that tonight, but it's got to be rewarding to you. You probably had a lot of kids that you met when you were younger that there's great success stories, right? Somebody you met at the hospital, you know, here in Nashville, the Blue Line Buddies, you probably will see a few of those guys tonight, but the connection that you made, that's got to be great to know that you left a mark like that, that it's kind of, it can, and it continues to this day.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, like, I think that, like, without the platform that hockey has given me, maybe I wouldn't have the opportunity to have that type of impact. But, you know, I realized that when I was probably 18 or 19, when I played on the World Junior team. And, you know, you have kids coming up to you from all different types of backgrounds, and it's not the kids, it's the parents saying that you're an inspiration to my kid. You know, not like, oh my God, that was an amazing goal that you scored, or oh my God, you're such an amazing hockey player. It's different when people approach you that way. So, you know, that happened at an age where I was probably too young to even really, you know, embrace it fully, but I did, you know, and it was important to me. So a lot of the things that I did throughout my NHL career, whether it be in Nashville or in Montreal, a lot of that was because I felt it was my responsibility to do a lot of those things, and I took that responsibility on, and I'm happy I did, because, you know, playing in the National Hockey League is great, you know, getting paid a lot of money, traveling, people love you, it's all great, but I've always been a guy that likes to have balance in my life, and, you know, you can get caught up into that stuff, but a lot of what I did in my charity and my foundation in the community kept my feet on the ground and kept me balanced in a lot of different ways, and that's why I never get too high or too low. You know, because I'm always winning. You know, whether I'm, you know, I lose again, I'm always winning in life.
Where do you think you got that ability to connect with kids? I mean, there are certain people, and you come to mind as at the top of the list of.
Well, I don't have any kids that I know of. I don't have any kids that I know of. So,
but you know,
it's not like I've been parent. Like,
No question. I get you. But you know, just you meet a group of people that you haven't met before. You dive right in there. They tell you their story, and you just have an ability to sort of hone in on that and sort of take it from there. And then the next thing you know, you got like a lifelong friend. They're following you from there, and you know you've inspired somebody like that. That's not an easy thing for everybody to have.
Yeah, I think I just don't like take myself too seriously. So, you know, not everybody's a fan of PK. You know, not everybody's a fan of myself. But, and I don't expect everybody to be a fan. I think, you know, part of me is like my ignorance to thinking that I'm different than everybody else. I've always thought of myself as everyone else. Sometimes that kind of gets me into trouble or puts me into situations where I end up being stressed out because I don't get treated like everyone else all the time. But that's the way I've always thought of myself, is just trying to be like everyone else. And, I think people feel that, you know, when you meet people, I think they feel that, you know, that they can talk to you. And when people are fans, if they feel that they can connect with you and touch you, they usually stay fans, you know? And that's really what it's all about is, you know, if you're true to yourself, then you're confident that when people get a chance to actually meet you and know you, then they're going to respect the person that you are. So, you know, I never get caught up, you know, with the people that aren't fans of mine because they don't probably really know me, you know, or they're fans of the Bruins, you know.
So, but before we let you go, too, how is your family doing? We had a chance, you know, your parents here for so many games. Your sisters, I know, were very close in helping you when you came to Nashville. You've got your brothers out there. How is everybody doing?
Fantastic. I can't complain. Health is the number one thing, and knock on wood, and everybody seems to be healthy, and we're just plugging away. Everybody's doing their thing. And I got to spend Thanksgiving with my family, first time in a long time, which is, I mean, just for the food, my mom's food. to be able to do that. I got two Thanksgivings this year. I got to do Canadian Thanksgiving and U.S. Thanksgiving with my best friend in Boston, so double food. But man, with this retirement, man, I put on like 14 quick, and then I dropped like 15. So, you know, I've now I'm like back into my program and working out, and it's actually a lot of fun, man. I'm having a great time just being able to have a balanced lifestyle. It's nice.
Saw you were on a mechanical bull last night. Is that hurt worse the day after than when you were actually playing? How are we feeling
so
today?
Scared. I was so scared because like one buddy said, oh my God, my friend did one of those and like busted her face open. It was all, and I'm like, don't tell me that. Like, I'm not trying to bust my face open. And I had a couple drinks already, so I was like a little worried. I'm like, should I be getting on this thing? Anyway, I got on it. I held on for dear life. It's a lot harder than it looks. It looks like it's going slow, but it's like, man, it looked, my run wasn't the greatest run on it. It was my first time doing it. So, and I don't think it was on advanced mode. I think it was like toddler mode. Like it was barely moving. But
Glad you made it out unscathed. First time, maybe not last time.
Definitely not the last time. But it would have to take a special, special day for me to get back on one of those things.
You mentioned something earlier in the interview, PK, structure.
Yeah.
And that's big for players, especially guys like yourself who've been playing basically all their life from you know, youth to your adult. How important, because people don't realize how important structure is to an athlete. When you've had structure your whole life and then all of a sudden you retire and it's like, okay, what am I doing? Where's the structure at? But you said you still got structure. How important is that?
Well, I loved having no structure for 4 months. I'll tell you that right now. I was not mad at that. I loved having no structure for 4 months. It was really nice to do that. And then, you know, it also just became like repetitive, mm-hmm. right? But not repetitive in a bad way. It's just like I'm a person that loves to work. I love to work. I love to work out. I like to take care of myself. I make my life really a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't just wake up every day. I have certain things. I want to take care of myself health-wise. I want to work. I want to continue to grow my business and do different things. And that's just ambition. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like why not attack a challenge of trying to be successful in something else? You know, and I have the time to do that. And it's a blessing to be able to do that at 33 when you have a lot of energy and you can travel and do that. Cause you know, media isn't easy. You got to travel, you got to do your research, you got to work. It can be a lot of late nights, but I love it. And it's just different. You know, the difference is that like on a Saturday, I wake up at 8 a.m. and drive to Bristol to go do an ABC special at 1 o'clock. And the difference is that, you know, Nashville guys get up, they eat their eggs, and they got to get ready to get punched in the face. You know? It's like, you know, it's like on a Saturday afternoon, it's like, you know, those early games, it's just different for me. So the work and the commitment is different, but it's the same kind of stimulation. It's the same mindset of, you know, taking care of what you got to do. And I love it. I love it. I love it.
PK Subban, former Nashville Predator. Yeah. Appreciate you for stopping by. Enjoy the night.
Thanks for having me, guys. I will.
It is PK Subban night. PK will be honored ahead of the Predators matchup with the Arizona Coyotes. Teron Davenport, NFL Nation, Tennessee Titans reporter, will join us coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.